Welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. This podcast is for those who are committed to thriving no matter where they are on that journey. And I say journey because thriving is not about achievement. It is not a destination. It's about engagement. It's about being energized by our life. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host. And I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or you may be considering your next career. You might be an entrepreneur or a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something's calling to you and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us so that when challenges show up, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's dive in to today's episode. Today are Dan and Lisa Aylward. I first heard their story about 5 or 6 years ago, and I was incredibly touched by it. It is a story of a remarkable journey and one of deep faith, faith in each other and faith in God. They've been married now for 21 years. They have 5 kids, all still at home, and a beautiful golden retriever. Lisa is busy keeping up the demands of the family, which includes the medical needs of the 2 youngest, who were adopted back in 2013. Dan is on the board of directors and a founding member of Abilita, a nationwide communications technology consulting organization. I think that you'll find their story inspiring, and I can't wait for you to meet them. Dan and Lisa, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. I have to tell you guys, I've been racking my brain because I know part of your story, and I've been trying to think of an adjective that would really capture what that journey has been. And for the life of me, I'm drawing a blank. And Dan, you've known me for a long time, and you know that I'm not often at a loss for words. So why don't you guys give us a little insight into the journey that you've been on for the last, you know, however many years?
Sure. I guess maybe one word that we might describe it in is it has certainly been a long journey, and by no means do we think that we are done on this journey. So, you know, a little background for us. Back in 2006, I think, we started the process of adoption. We had 3 healthy boys, and we wanted to adopt a little girl. And we thought the best way to go about it would be to adopt from China. And for all practical purposes, that didn't work out. Although we've been waiting. And some friends encouraged us to consider looking at adopting here locally and through the foster care system. And so that's when we waited a very long time, 5 or 6 years. In fact, we were ready to close our application, our dossier. And then we got a call on a Friday afternoon, and I came home from a meeting, and I normally don't answer the call, but I did. And the foster care worker said, "Hey, we have a little girl here." And I said, "Wow, and that's great." And I said, "Well, let me talk about it with my wife and pray about it." And he said, "Yeah, you do what you need to, but somebody's got to pick her up by 5 o'clock.
Oh my God. By the way, she has a brother.
Right. So it's the a boy and a girl.
It's not just one, it's two.
Right.
Yeah.
So we had some friends along the way say, you know, the way this often happens is the siblings come together. And so we've been waiting for a girl. She had an older brother, but she was, just born. Just 2 days prior. Wow. And we had all kinds of questions we asked, And some friends helped us with some of the asking these health related questions. One of them was with our son Josiah. They said, you know, we don't think it's anything, but he has a spot on his kidney.
And it's been repaired.
Cleft palate, been repaired, but there's been some medical trauma that's there.
Wow.
And so the short answer is we talked about it. We prayed about it. We even talked with our three older boys. And you know, we got in the car and we went down to the hospital. And, wow. You know, a funny side story is it was, I think, the side of the hospital said it was the woman's
mother baby center.
And my my son looked at me and said, well, Dad, what are you going to do? Wait in the car?
Actually, I think it was mother child center.
Okay. So, you know, there's a little bit of education there going on.
Yeah. I'm curious, what time did you originally get the call?
It was after lunch. And then we had to be at the hospital by 6. And I think Dan was at Rotary. So when he got home, we talked about it. And so we only had a few hours to try to get everything ready. We pretty much had nothing. We had a car seat. And we had a crib that wasn't set up. It was still in our storage from when the boys were younger, but we didn't have bottles or, you know, anything like that that a baby would need. So we showed up at the hospital, stormed the maternity ward, and the pediatrician on call there, you know, kind of, she was excited to see us, that we were a family, you know, coming to get Lily. And, but she said that the boys had to stay in the waiting room. So we walked up and Dan started filling out paperwork with CPS. And then I went over and she was sleeping in a little bassinet in the hallway and picked her up. And, you know, it was, I can't explain the feeling. She was so tiny.
Yeah,
she wasn't my birth child, but I felt an instant connection with her. And I had to ask the doctor, they said, do you have any questions? I said, I don't know how to feed a baby a bottle, you know, like a newborn a bottle. And so I said, oh, that's a good question. And he showed me how to do it. Yeah. But, you know, all those instincts came back, you know, quickly with caring for a newborn. And I think we realized that at that point, I remember, I think I cried almost the whole way there because I thought everything as we know it is changing. We didn't know how. We knew we were going to give our hearts to these children, and we didn't know if we were going to be able to keep them. And so
that's right.
I think that was our biggest concern, is we having to give them back to a situation that would be less than ideal. Because Josiah at that point was already in foster care. He was had been placed with a different family. And when they found out Lily was going to be born, that family wasn't able to take on, you know, another child.
Right.
And so
I remember driving to the hospital, and it was like your foot on the brake and foot on the gas between Lisa and me, because I kept saying, Lisa, this is great. You know, let's do it. And she kept saying, yeah, but there's two. But he may have an answer. And I said, we can do this. And she's like, I'm not ready for this. And I said, this is what we've been waiting for. And she said, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about it. You had hours to, it became very, very real very quickly.
Yes.
Right. And at the time, my mom had been going through cancer treatments, and so I knew what that could potentially be like. I just didn't want to go there. The spot on the kidney thing turned out to be nothing.
Right.
And it just wasn't communicated poorly from the worker. You know, she didn't really have all the facts. The cleft palate that she said was pretty much taken care of has been a bigger issue for him.
Wow.
So we left the hospital with Lily, and had to stop and buy diapers and formula and clothes and all that stuff on the way home. And we actually visited a family member of ours, had some baby things. So we stopped by their house and picked some things up. So, you know, wow. Things changed.
Yeah.
And then a few weeks later, Josiah, we started doing visits with him in his foster home and made the transition transitioning him into our home. So, yeah. Then it was kind of strange. We were back in diapers and up, you know, at all hours of the night, and we had two cribs in our house, and, you know, things had changed quite a bit for us.
Yeah. Because how old were your three boys at how old were your three boys at this point?
Our oldest was 10, and then we would have an 8.5-year-old and a 6.5-year-old about that time.
So it had been a while since you had an infant in the house.
Yeah. Or a toddler. We had both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So then I know that there are some health, and that's a massive understatement, but Lily had some, I think when we talked before, I think you guys told me that in the first month or in 1 month, you had 35 doctor appointments between the two kids.
Right.
Well, it was doctor, but then also we had early on services, and we had all the foster care workers and the attorney and just all those different people that we had to report to. I think there may have been a parenting visitor too with the birth parents, but shortly after they came into our home, there was no longer any parent visits. We would have a lot of appointments.
There were a lot of appointments for sure, which we were not ready for that. But on top of the busyness, basically the first appointment with our pediatrician, she looked at, you know, Lily's head and said, this is not good. You're going to have basically cranial facial reconstruction. And we said, no.
She said she suspected it and she wanted a CT scan.
So we said, you know, in my family, there's been some strange shaped heads. Everybody knows I have an egg head, you know, stuff like that. Cover it up with hair. She'll be fine too. But as time went on, we realized this really is a big deal. So you got all the medical appointments. You got all these things we talked about before that we really can't do justice of how crazy life got.
No.
Appointments. And then you got, this is major construction. Now, you normally have to wait until she's about 8 months old, and that's around the time she did have it done. But on top of all that, all five of us, our hearts are starting to attach to Lily and then Josiah. And you're not even sure if you're keeping her as your own daughter.
Mm-hmm. That was hard. When she was about, I think, 2 months old, she was diagnosed with the craniosynostosis. And then she had a lot of other things like asthma. She had reflux. She had just low tone in her body. It wasn't really developing. Like milestones, she wasn't really growing. So there was a lot of things. So we knew she had to have the surgery, but we had to work really hard to get her body strong enough to be able to survive the surgery. And so that was why we had all those appointments. And, you know, every appointment you go to, you're in the back of your mind, you feel like you have to prove that you're a parent who's capable to be able to care for this child, because she's a ward of the state. And I knew, like, at any moment, if they suspected anything, she would be removed and the kids, you know, all the kids would be removed from us. And so that was an added pressure. To have the state involved and have to communicate everything. And it was just a lot more hoops to jump through. So about 8 months old, she had her cranial vault reconstruction. And we kind of thought, oh, she'll do better after this. And which she didn't. She actually went downhill after that.
Oh.
Yeah, I would say that was probably the darkest time of all after the surgery.
Right.
And I remember at my lowest point, I remember of all places having a shower, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, because that's the only place I have alone because I got five kids now running around the house. And I just remember thinking, you know, we need help. Like, I'm praying. I'm like, God, we need you to show up because we're not doing this. She's considered failure to thrive by the state. And we're doing everything that they're telling us to. And this is getting dire. This is getting to the place where I'm starting to get nervous. And I normally don't get worried about, you know, medical stuff and all that. But we were in a pretty low, dark place. Lily would have asthma treatments that would have to go on occasion throughout the night. And so she had a machine in her room that if something wasn't working, it would beep. And Lisa would lose her sleep because of that. So she'd wake up in a panic because something isn't working. And, you know, the only thing that kept us going was just black coffee, really.
Yes. So she wasn't keeping any foods down. So she had to put a feeding tube in her.
Right.
So Dan and I would have to, she'd pull it out. We'd have to put it back in.
Right. So after her surgery, you know, she had a approximately 9-hour surgery. The surgery was so intense that the swelling caused her eyes to close completely shut.
Mm-hmm.
Most likely that caused trauma, but it was certainly necessary.
And can you give me a little detail? Like, what is that surgery? What does that look like? Or what does that mean?
So before she was born, the sutures of the skull had already fused. So that her brain didn't really have room to grow. So she didn't have that little soft spot, that fontanelle on the top. And so the surgeon had a neurosurgeon who opened up the skull and opened, you know, yeah, the skull and popped it out. Then they took it off. They cut the front part of the skull off.
That's not the medical term, by the way.
Yeah. Then they had to reconstruct it using these dissolvable polymers and screws.
Wow.
And then the plastic surgeon put it back on. So she's the one who reshaped the skull and she put it back on. And then she stitched it all back up. So, I mean, these doctors are absolutely amazing.
Amazing.
Because I have no patience for stuff like that. And she sutured Lily's head up for minimal scarring. Mm-hmm. And she did these zigzag incision. And so her hair would lay right, you know, so she didn't have to struggle with her hair doing weird stuff because of a scar. And so she kind of even went strand by strand of her hair. Now as she's stitching it up, that's after doing all the other work. So it's really remarkable. So Lily got an infection at the hospital. It was a MRSA infection, and it was in her incision. And we're not really quite sure how it happened, but she got it, and then that spread throughout our whole family.
But remember, she had a monitor for brain pressure behind her ear, and that got stuck in her head the day before you're supposed to leave. So there's this little gauge literally still inside her head, and the doctor tried to pull it out, and this wire got stuck in her head.
We could hear her screaming in the next room. And then because they didn't want to sedate her again, but then they ended up needing to sedate her.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a bunch of things, you know, that made it a long road for her and for us. And, you know, we were with her every step of the way.
We stayed with her in recovery, and we played like lullaby Christian music in there. And I remember that we just got, like, you know, I don't know what it was, an iPod and speakers, and just played it all the time. And there were other families in there too. There's about five or six families. And ironically, a lot of people, nurses, the other parents said, this is great. This is very calming. This is really helpful.
It calmed out the babies in the nursery.
So that was a small good decision. You know, Lisa's full of great decisions along the way. And that was one where, like, that was a good move to do that.
She wasn't going to be able to see. And so we wanted that she recognized that she could hear.
Yeah. And that she would know that you were guys, that you were there. She wasn't alone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You said that she didn't immediately get better after the surgery.
Right.
So that was probably the beginning of the some dark, difficult places. That's where it came out to be, where she was not eating. And she got into that classification by the state of failure to thrive. And we got to the point of giving her a feeding tube. She kept pulling it out. You know, Lisa would have to run her down to the hospital to have a nurse put it back in. And the nurse eventually said, you know, I can show you how to do this. And so sure enough, she did pull it out. And Lisa had to pin her down and I had to shove it up her nose.
Oh, that had to be hard.
And I just got to the point where I don't even know if I'm getting it into her stomach or her lungs at this point.
We didn't want to fill up her lungs with formula.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's where that came to that point where I said, I'm taking a shower and saying, we are really at our lowest point here. This is scary of where we're at. And someone said to Lisa, you know, at church, we have a prayer time and bring her in, bring Josiah in, bring your family in, and we're going to pray for all of you guys. And we are like, let's do it. I mean, we believe in prayer, but
right.
We also were like, why not? You know, and so it was consistent with what I was asking, praying for. So
right.
We went into the prayer time and you know, some people prayed for me and prayed for the boys and so on. But what stood out to us, and Bobby, I tell you, I've never gone through anything like this before, is our doctor, who's now my doctor, he was there in the prayer team. He was holding her and he's saying, you know, praying for her health, praying for her well-being. And he said, you know, I'm feeling some sensations going up and down her spine. And that often happens when God is healing somebody. And I don't know, I think I looked at Lisa and I said, okay.
Yeah.
Like, what? Like, I'm all for this, but what? And yeah. So basically, I remember thinking, I'll take it. Like, I'll take
That's
it.
Right.
And I think the fact that he's an MD added some credibility. Like, here's a guy who's a Christian, and he's not doing anything weird, but he's telling us this.
And, mm-hmm.
We had questions, medical questions that we had in our minds. And he was able to answer some of those things that other
right.
doctors couldn't, or he could speak to us as a physician, but also as a person too. And so we really, you know, respected what he had to say. And there was a lot of things that people shared with us during that time that I went home and I wrote it all down because there was so much there. It was very significant stuff. And we went back and several months later and realized a lot of those things had come true. So it was,
wow.
It was pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Lisa, when you say that they were telling you that stuff, can you give an example of something that you heard that then came true?
One was about just the brain, like her brain was being healed. The biggest one was about the healing. And they did talk
yeah.
about, you know, our other children and our family. And one thing they had shared was Dan's business, like, because we were doing these things, like taking care of these kids and kind of full throttle, that his business wouldn't struggle. You know, it would be profitable.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. it has been, and we're really grateful for that.
Right.
Because we were relying on that, really, because there's no way I could have worked and done this, and, you know, then to be able to attend to the needs of all of our kids.
Yeah, so being self-employed, you know, and it's great working from home, but it did take time away from me, you know, when we had to do things like this, even if it's just keep an eye on the other kids while Lisa takes one of the kids to a doctor appointment or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I do remember that as well, Lisa, that they specifically said, we're going to pray that your business does very well. Mm-hmm. And I have seen that happen. I mean, I've had some success before that, but it grew even more from that.
Yeah.
It's been sustained. So that was totally encouraging to have friends come around us and encourage us in that way.
And not that that's always mm-hmm. the case, you know, for everybody, but it yeah. was for us in this situation. So we're very grateful.
It's so important.
Yeah. And then one thing is that we didn't mention about Josiah is he's older than Lily, about a year and a half older. And when we met him, you know, he was born with a cleft palate and lip. He'd been neglected and not had a lot of the things that he needed for repair and his, you know, like with his bone structure, mm-hmm. but then also just developmental support. And so when we met him, he didn't talk. He didn't really know how to chew food. He didn't have a cup that he could drink out of without it, him aspirating into his lungs.
Yeah, and so he was about 18 months old at this point. So significantly delayed in all the basic things he should have been bypassing these milestones.
So he had to teach him sign language and to be able to communicate with us. So he had been a victim, right? Things had happened to him and he had no voice. He couldn't stand up for himself at all. And I mean, voice that he could cry, but I don't think he did much because he learned that it wasn't going to be responded to. So we taught him the sign stop.
When you have
he was empowered.
When you have three older brothers, you use that one first and always.
Yeah. Wow. So then you guys, you had the prayer meeting. You went to that. What happened? What happened after?
Well, Lily was following up with so many doctors and things. We started to see her develop milestones really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So she would make gains in her milestones, you know, the PT or whatever would come once a week and she would be shocked. So in a month's time, Lily would make 3 or 4 months progress mm-hmm. in her development. And so we also saw her body getting stronger, where she was getting more muscle tone and she was able, you know, she was able to do things. So she started feeding herself. So she started eating, which before it was such a chore even to get her to eat. And so it was just amazing to see. And it would seem like it was just overnight. All of a sudden, she had a spurt and had a bunch of new
milestones.
Yeah, a bunch of new milestones. So mm-hmm. it was pretty amazing to watch. And so she went, when she was about a year old, she was wearing not even 12 pounds, probably wearing like a 6-month clothes. And when she was about 2.5 after this happened, she started wearing, I think it was 18-month clothes or something. So she had grown, you know, close to a year's in size, or a little over a year in size within that short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really encouraging for us to see.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And how old is Lily and Josiah now?
So Lily is almost 9 and Josiah is 10 and a half.
Yeah.
10 and a half. And how are they now?
They're doing well. I mean, they're strong. Lily, so she had that initial healing and we saw huge gains, but then she's also had other things she's had to really work really hard to gain. So there's, you know, some struggles with learning. She's had to continue to work to keep her body strong. She's had to work through some different neurological weaknesses and things like that. So she still does get a lot of therapy, but, you know, she's growing and she's eating and she's developing and she's learning. And this summer, it was encouraging. You know, we weren't sure she'd ever, we weren't even sure at one point if she'd ever walk. But this summer, she learned right. how to ride a bike and swim. Wow. So, you know, it's maybe behind some other kids, but she's doing it. And her,
that's right.
Her teachers at the school say she is the hardest working kid with the best attitude that they have. And she's had to work hard from day one and she doesn't complain about it. She just digs in and she works. So,
yeah. One thing about Josiah and Lily is they bring a lot of joy into our home. And so now that Lily is riding her bike, like everybody in our neighborhood knows Lily.
Yeah.
Right.
She's very social.
She's very, very social. She's absolutely cute and sweet and she's pretty charming. And, you know, so they just bring a lot to our family that we didn't have before. And some people have said to us, wow, that's so great of you that you've adopted two kids. And I mean, literally when we had the adoption day with the judge, he said, if it wasn't for you guys, she wouldn't be alive. And I don't disagree with that. But at the same time, you know, this is a two-way street. They bring so much into our lives, you know, so not for a second would I be fooled into thinking how heroic of us to do this, nor is that the reason that we did it, but they bring so much joy into our home. And, you know, even when you got three teenage boys, so now we do, you know, boys, you know, they're stoic, they're muscular, they're tough, they, you know, they keep it close to the vest. And then Josiah or Lily come in and then the atmosphere changes, you know, because they do bring joy into our home.
Yeah. I think when we spoke before, you said like the glue that brought everything together.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Wow.
So they've really added a whole new dynamic. And, you know, like Lisa said, things have not come easy for the both of them. They really have had good attitudes about what they have to do, what they know what's in front of them. There's still going to be more surgeries. We know that. We still
really
talk with them about surgeries. A year ago, Josiah had to have a surgery to replace some bone marrow from his hip to put it into his palate. And
wow,
you know, he did it. You know, he went right through it, and I think he knew mom and dad were there. So that's one constant that we can provide for them along the way.
And that's huge. I mean, that can't be understated.
Yeah. Right.
How do you think the whole experience and journey, how did it change you?
Boy, in so many ways, because you know, I can tell you as a parent, you think you got it down. You have a process, you know, you got three boys relatively close in age and you think you got parenting down and then you're learning along the way. For a long time, you're not even sure if you're going to get to be their parents. And, so you're humbled through all of that. And I think probably humility is a big one that came along the way with, you know, you think you got it figured out and you're humbled. And I do think this has made our faith even stronger. Like, we certainly can't do this alone. And, you know, God has shown up. God has been there. And in addition, we had no idea that we eventually had 3-4 other families who lived not too far from us also adopt multiple kids. And we were like, wow, like there's other people just as crazy as us, just not too far away.
Yeah. It's good to belong to something, right?
Yeah, the kids, you know, had their kids maybe didn't have the medical needs, but they developed or they adopted larger quantities of kids. So,
wow.
But one thing that we didn't talk about that was significant is just before we took Lily to be prayed for, her parental rights were being terminated, or for both kids, mm-hmm. the rights were being terminated. And so we had a decision to make. You know, Dan said, this is a lot, and we need to make sure that we're...
Well, that came out of a doctor giving a diagnosis.
Well, kind of. And so we realized that this is a lot, and are we willing to take it on? So we took some time to just pray and fast, because we, it was a lot, but our hearts were really drawn towards the kids, and the thought of sending them to another family, or, you know, it was really hard. But yeah, we knew, okay, Lily may never walk. She may always need a feeding tube. You know, are we up for this? And so we made that decision, you know, after that to go ahead and pursue adopting the kids. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
that was significant for us. And, you know, really when, the people were praying for us, they kind of said that was a big piece. It's like our commitment to them to stick with them no matter what. Big mm-hmm. piece in Lily's being healed. Mm-hmm. You know, that at that point we had kind of become her parents. Before we were viewed more as, you know, the foster parent. But at that point when we made that commitment, even though the hearing wasn't final in our hearts, you know, we were prepared to be parents. And then that was a significant part of them.
Mm-hmm.
That was.
Sounds like the hearing made it like you guys had already made your decision. Like you yeah. knew that you were their parents no matter what. So I have to ask you guys, and I know we talked about this before, but because I think you told me there was a point where they said that she might not make it, and that, you know, nothing was final yet. And essentially, if you wanted to walk away, you could. And I think, Lisa, that's what you're kind of talking yeah. about there.
Yeah.
Was there ever a point where you considered it?
Yeah, like around that point we did.
Right. So as you're getting, things are bad, and then you just keep finding things get worse, and you just keep thinking, surely it'll get better from here. We got to that point where, you know, probably the bottom. And so we just got to the point like, listen, doctors don't know what to tell us. And she's so many specialists, and they're not giving us answers that we're looking for. And we just had I just said, Lisa, you know, let's hit pause here for a minute, and we can consider walking away. You know, we're not committed to them, nor has they've been given to us by the state. And let's really take a look at this. Are we sure this is the road we want to go down? Because it's not looking like it's getting any better at this point. And in fact, things could get really bad. And are we prepared for that? And we, like Lisa said, we prayed about it. We fasted about it. We even had some discussions with the older boys. But it even crossed my mind, like, you know, of course they're younger and they don't completely understand all of this. But we said we were going to adopt these kids. And that's the commitment that we're keeping. And regardless of how many surgeries or how much disabilities that we have to go through with them, we basically said, yeah, we're ready. We are all in on this, regardless of what comes. So when it came to that hearing in the courthouse, and I tell you, Bobby, that was a celebration, standing room only. That was crazy. Wow. Crazy how great that was. We already knew in our mind, our minds were made up at that point.
The termination hearing, that was like that. That was the adoption, which happened, you know.
Yeah.
We had, there's close to 100 people there with us.
Wow. That is so cool. And I love what you guys are saying there about being all in. I also remember, Dan, you said something like, if you made the decision to give Lily and Josiah back, what would that be role modeling to your older boys?
Yeah, exactly. And so we knew this had deep ramifications one way or the other. And we also knew going forward, life will never be the same. I guess the easy thing to do would to say, this just isn't for us. We can't do this. And life would have got a lot easier and simpler and probably even fiscally better off too. But, you know, we're all in. We have a purpose while we're here.
Our hearts would have been broken.
Our hearts would have been broken. It would have been very difficult to move forward past that. And I don't think either decision would have been an easy one, but
no,
we put our mind and our heart into that decision.
Yep. You said there, Dan, that you have a purpose while you're here. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah. You know, I'd say as Christians, our purpose is to really glorify God. But as you get a little bit more specific in your life or granular and you pray through it, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to, you know, invent a cure to cancer. I don't think I'm going to do anything significant. But wherever I am, wherever we are, we're going to make the best impact that we can. And we're honoring God. But sometimes it's not really all that difficult of a decision, you know, to do the best impact that you can in a way that's, you know, glorifying God. That doesn't make it easy. That doesn't mean it's a smooth, easy path that you're on. But sometimes it's not that difficult of a decision either to do what's best for others around us. So we knew we had enough, you know, not to sound too cliche-like, but we had enough room in our heart for two more kids, for one girl, and then Josiah just stole our heart.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like I said, some people may patronize us and say, that's so great of you. And I'll just be quick to say, they have done so much in my life, in our hearts. And doesn't mean life is easy, but there's there's a lot more joy along the journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing for me is that because they come from a hard place, because they have medical challenges, some emotional challenges, physical challenges. Things aren't so black and white. I have to always look at situations and why they're acting the way that they are and change my response or try to discern what's the best way to respond. And so I've had to be a lot more gracious and understanding. Where maybe in the past it was more black and white, you know, he ran across the street, could have gotten hit by a car, you know, needs to be disciplined right away, you know, it, for example.
Yep.
And so now I have to really think through that, and there has to be a lot of conversations, and it's very different. So I guess I'm just not so black and white. And have a different perspective from having to consider all the things, you know. So a behavior, I might have to think, okay, is this trauma? Is this just a child being a child? Is this a child who has like emotional wounds? Is this a child who has, you know, some delays and things? And so I'm always thinking through that kind of a thing.
And you know, one more thought of how it changed us is I think Lisa and I have a greater empathy for really the single mom, the mom who she has one or two kids, maybe more, and kids are not catching up in school. The finances aren't there. Like, I feel like I have a better perspective in seeing all this. instead of just having the attitude, you know, why don't you just get your life together and everything will work out? You know,
it's so easy,
it's
right?
It's so easy because I'm only looking at it from my perspective, and my eyes have been open to, there's some real heavy things that the single mom has to go through with not just life, but what if you do have a kid who has disabilities, problems, delays, and you have your own things on top of that? It's some heavy stuff to walk through, especially if you're alone.
Another thing are other parents who are walking the journey with children who have extra needs. You know, there's a lot more compassion and a lot more in common. And then, you know, one other thing too is I've learned to be an advocate. So I pretty much handle everything for the kids. I mean, Dan's definitely involved, but the day in and day out, all the therapists, all the doctors, all the teacher staff, you know, like everything that kind of goes through me. And so I really learned how to advocate, how to build bridges, how to communicate needs, you know, to be persistent, but not burn the bridges by being persistent. And so it's really opened up the number of people that I interact with. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of people that right. I'm interacting with because of the little ones. Right. And so, you know, I think that's a good thing, you know, to have those opportunities.
Absolutely.
To get to know people. So.
Right.
I think it's one of those things that, I don't know if you want to call it like the silver lining of adversity or challenge, but what you guys are talking about, you know, new perspective, compassion, empathy, you know, being an advocate. I don't know that a person can go through such a challenge and not somehow be changed by it, you know, grow from it.
Yeah. Unless they choose to get bitter and kind of shut down. I mean, I think that can happen, and I've seen that happen where then you see from that point on, they don't grow like for the rest of their lives. But if they choose to, you know, embrace it and to
consider
it, then, you know, that's the case.
You're also looking towards God and say, God, what are you doing through this? Mm-hmm. Like, why are you allowing this to happen? Because this was not part of the plan.
Right.
And so I think it does take a faith, sometimes a good amount of faith, to say, what next? You know, what next? And we have gone through other adversities in life. Like when I started my business and it was like, when is this actually going to work? And you know, same thing with the kids. It's like, when is this getting better?
Well, one thing that you guys said in the joy of the journey is that you don't know how it's going to turn out. Can you tell me more about what you meant by that?
Well, one quote kind of during this time that stuck out to me was that life isn't about waiting for the storm to pass. It's about learning to dance in the rain. And I think it kind of goes along with, you know, there's a joy in the journey. And it's, you know, embracing the journey because that's part of it. You know, it's not the destination, it's the journey.
Right.
And it's learning how to, like it says, dance in the rain, how to live. You know, I live in a way that, like Dan said, glorifying God, live in a way that's loving others, live in a way like for healing and wholeness and things in the midst of it.
Right.
And not just crumple into yourself.
Right. Yeah. And I would add to that, it is enjoying the present. Listen, we know life is crazy. We brought this onto ourselves. And we're enjoying a little bit of crazy right now. And there's a lot of joy in having family and kids around you, for sure. And eventually our kids are going to grow up and move out. And that's expected and hoped for. But at the same time, we don't really know what tomorrow will bring either. It could be a turn for the worse as well. But we're enjoying today. We're appreciating each other. And like Lisa said, we're living in the present while we prepare for the future.
Yeah. I love that. And I love the dancing in the rain. Lisa, was that when we were on the Zoom call, is that the picture frame that you showed me? I loved that.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So guys, if someone wanted to get in touch with you to learn more about your story, is there a good way for people to connect with you?
Yeah. Start with paypal.com.
And then?
Just kidding. No, the door is open. People can reach out and...
your email. I don't know if you want to post it.
Yeah.
In the comments.
If they reach out to you and you want to forward it, that's great. Be happy to.
Okay.
You know, we've received and we've given along the way. And so, there's plenty that we'd be happy to share, along the way.
Cause I imagine if someone's on that journey, just knowing that there are other people who have made it through, yes. I think sometimes that just gives so much hope,
yes.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story. Cause I know it's very personal. Is there anything that we didn't touch on that you want to?
You know, I do think we kind of hit the highlights with it, but I guess I would just wrap up with saying this is like what we just talked about. This is a journey. Life is a journey, and you know, there's a verse in the Bible that talks about. A kernel needs to die to itself before it can reproduce, you know, hundreds of other seeds and then trees. And so for us, it has taken some dying to ourselves. And there has been some beauty that has come about from it. And I think a big part of that process is the humility that it takes, the faith that it takes. And really, Lisa and I looking at each other often and saying, now you remember we're on the same team, don't you?
Sometimes it's easy to lose sight of
that.
Sometimes
it is. That's right. So we do remind each other that we just celebrated our 21st anniversary, and it was a lot of fun. And just having the, you know, the kids are healthy and they're all at home, and for this season of life, we really are enjoying each other.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, congratulations on the anniversary.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, thanks for sharing your story. And I'm so glad that the kids are doing well. And it's just always, it's always great to talk to you.
Yeah. Thanks,
Bob. Thank you so much for having us.
I hope that you were touched by their story. So many things resonated for me. Here are my top takeaways. Number one, find ways to center yourself. That can include getting support from community. It can be turning to your faith or to prayer. Number two, find a way to have margin. This one is so relevant in our society as we find ourselves being so over-programmed. How do you find a way to unplug a bit and create some space to breathe? Number three, an irreversible change with a difficult challenge can still bring joy to your life. Number four, the decision to go all in with your commitments can pull you through the learning and adaptations needed to thrive. Number five, when faced with a long journey with twists, turns, and dark times, keep making decisions, keep taking steps, keep learning. It's how we persist. Number six, when making a commitment, do it because it's important and meaningful, not for the kudos or our own ego or for pride. Do it because we know who we are and how it aligns with that and what we value. Number seven, deciding to serve others is a way to make the biggest impact that you can. It doesn't have to be grand. It just has to be meaningful. Number eight, a challenge that forces you to adapt can give you new perspective and empathy for others. It also opens up the opportunity to build bridges and connect with others. Number nine, I loved what Lisa said, that life isn't about waiting for the storm to pass. It's about learning to dance in the rain. It is not a destination. It is a journey. Learn to live in that and enjoy the present while preparing for the future. My hope is that by sharing stories of faith and courage, you can find inspiration and hope for your own journey, whatever that might look like for you. If you found this podcast helpful, please consider subscribing as well as leaving us a 5-star review below. Also, if you know someone who could benefit from the podcast and the message that we are spreading, please tell them about it. This has been the Unyielded Podcast, and I believe that thriving is not a destination. It is a process, an evolution where we are continuing to expand who we are. It is how we flourish and how we can direct our energy into a place of positive influence. My life's work is to change the world for the better, one life at a time. I hope that you'll help me do that by sharing the word.